Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Community Geek Podcast. My name is Katie Kobe, and I'm head of training for Feverbee Limited. I train community managers in the art of community building using proven social science techniques. In the Community Geek Podcast, I'll share tools and techniques that you can use in your daily community management efforts. Listen weekly to get new tips, industry news, and hear great stories from guest practitioners to help you become the best community manager in the business. Make sure you subscribe for free updates and get all the resources mentioned in the show in the show notes. Show notes are published weekly at communitygeek.com/podcast. So here with me today is John Baku, founder of FetLife.com. Hello, John.
Hola.
FetLife is a social network for the BDSM and fetish community. It was founded in 2008 and boasts over 3 million members worldwide. Naturally, the content on the site is not safe for work, so please take that into consideration prior to accessing. Additionally, John will be joining us in San Francisco at the end of October as one of our speakers for our upcoming Sprint event, and we're very, very excited to have you there. So welcome again.
I'm really surprised that somebody invited me.
Well, you know, Rich, he's got a very, very explicitly curated list, so I'm really curious to hear what you're going to be chatting about. Do you have any ideas there yet?
I have no clue. He specifically said he preferred to interview me because he's afraid of let the reins off.
Oh, geez. Well, that sounds like it'll make for a really interesting segment whenever that happens, so I'll be curious to hear how it works out.
I'm looking forward to it.
But in preparation for today, I went over to FetLife myself earlier this morning and logged in, checked it out a little bit. And you've got some really interesting stuff going on over there. And one of my big questions actually has to do with designing the site. The first thing that popped out at me, you had a few member quotes on the homepage that cited how much they like loved the site and how easy it was. And so what was your sort of, you know, rationale behind designing the site? How did you go in figuring out what the best user experience would be?
I think it had to. So when it came to user experience, the site hasn't been updated in a while. I was the one who originally designed FetLife, and come to think of it, I don't think there was any other person who's ever really touched much of FetLife other than myself. Mm-hmm. When it came to the design, there's a lot of bad or scummy adult-oriented communities out there,
right,
that are just out there to take you for your money. And there, when we started FetLife, it was really, you know, I wanted to start a fight. I wanted to start a fight with the adult industry, and I wanted to show that it can be done in a much better way, nicer way, respectful way. Not only that, is that I felt that my biggest thing that I want to do is I want people to make people feel comfortable with who they are sexually. Growing up, I never felt comfortable with who I was sexually. I probably still don't feel comfortable with who I am sexually. And it just was kind of one of the worst feelings in the world. Mm-hmm. And especially before I really got onto the internet, or before I realized there's other people like me out there. So when we designed the front page, it was about, we needed to really show that there was other people out there like you, and that it was very important to find people that you can relate to. Mm-hmm. So one of the first pictures we put on the front page was a group of people, old, young, you know, women, men, different colors, different ethnicities, different sizes, different everything, because I wanted people to look at the picture and say, oh my God, there's a person just like me on the site. I'm not alone. Because being alone is one of the worst feelings in the world.
Right.
So the quotes were part of that, is that, you know, once you saw that thing, you're like, okay, once you saw the top of the page, you're like, if you didn't sign up, you know, you were apprehensive. So as you scroll down, what we need to do is we need to catch and manage any person's, not risks, but concerns.
Right.
To persuade them to sign up.
Right. That was one of the things that I noticed. You know, just reading through the why you join section is very comprehensive. You look at some communities out there and it's like, join to get insights and blah, blah, blah from experts in the industry. And it's like one sentence, that's it. And whereas you have a very detailed, it's like 10 bullet point list where you go into, you know, all of these things to help people feel more comfortable. Like even going as far as to mention the type of, you know, security used on the site. You use the same level of security that banks use. And I thought that was really an interesting way of looking at it. And, you know, getting people to feel comfortable with who they are and being willing to be a part of this community so that they can further explore themselves and further make themselves feel comfortable. I thought was a really interesting way. So when it comes to making changes to the site, how often do you involve the community in that decision? Is it something that you put up? I noticed that there was sort of like a voting component. Can you talk a little bit to that?
So the voting component was kind of a failure on our part.
Oh, really?
Because we didn't include the downvoting. All we include is upvoting. So for instance, the most popular or most requested feature with like 30,000 votes is be able to search people by age, sex, location.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the comments section, there's probably as many people who don't like it as they like it. And a lot of people have joined the site because it was kind of an anti-dating site. There was no, one of the premises when we started FetLife was to make it so the women felt comfortable being there. Majority of dating sites and, adult social networks or communities, the ratio of men to women is like 10 to 1. It's 90%, it's 90%, men, 10%, 10% women if you're lucky. And FetLife is close to 50-50. And so we really sat down, tried to figure out why was those ratios all messed up? And it had a lot to do with like stuff like being able to search people by age, sex, location. It had to do with being able to, women being bombarded and not feeling like comfortable being there. Or being able to be there in peace. So I understand why men or people who are dating want to be able to find people by age, sex, location, but I also see how that's not good for the community.
Mm-hmm.
But to answer your question, we tend to discuss openly all of the changes that we make with the community. We open up, I'll post pictures of any of the designs I'm working on my profile to get people to comment on it. If, for instance, a couple of people ask if we change the color of this one thing, or what if we move to the left, to the right, I'll repost another picture saying, okay, well, how do you like this one? Is this version better than the old version?
Mm-hmm.
We'll make announcements about it. When we can, and then sometimes we make it just an announcement afterwards, or make an announcement afterwards. And if the community doesn't like what change we make, we'll revert it. You know, we're not afraid to. Well, one of the biggest ones we did was we spent like a good 3 solid months, hard core working on a new activity feed that we thought the community would love. 8 hours after we launched, they hated it big time. So we just reverted it. You know, it was really hard on us to do it, but the community wanted it, and that's what we did.
Yeah, and you are in the best interest for them there. Well, 2 points out of that. Let's go back to that, the thing you said, you felt that voting was a failure because it didn't include downvoting. I see a ton of sites out there that are too scared to put in downvoting because they're like, oh, it's going to make people negative, or they're going to fight with each other. Thoughts?
Okay, so one of the things to do with our voting system is that you only get 3 votes.
Okay.
And when a feature is implemented, you get back one of your votes. So let's say you voted on 3 things, thing X, one of the things gets accepted, you get back that one vote to be able to vote on something else. The reason why we only allow 3 is because of constraints.
Mm-hmm.
If you could vote on anything, you'd be like, yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, that sounds good. Why not? But doesn't mean you're going to use it. If you only have 3, you really have to think about it and be like, okay, if I was only to get 3 improvements to the site, what would they be?
Mm.
When it comes to downvotes, that's the same thing as well. It's like, okay, we should have had them. We should have lived in 3 to be able to say, you know what? I love the site, but these are like 3 things that I really don't like. Downvotes, like on pictures, we only have loves.
Right.
On videos and writings, we only have loves. We don't like, oh, this is a piece of shit.
Right.
You know, option. That doesn't promote anything positive.
It's not helpful either.
No, but when it comes to voting on features, it's really, really important to, before we invest our time, to know how many people want it, how many people don't want it, and to understand both sides. Because sometimes, you know, as a designer, it's about understanding both sides and coming to a compromise and be like, wait a minute, I understand why you need what you need. I understand why you don't want it, but how about we do it this way? And then you can solve, both people's problems.
Very cool. That's just such a really interesting way to look at it. I mean, so many sites are only, I used to work for a community platform vendor, and they also were like, no, we're only going to give people the ability to say yes to things, not the ability to say no. And I think that it's a huge important part of public discourse and public discussion is the ability to say, no, actually, I don't agree with that, or that's not something that's going to work for me. So,
and some people could say, well, you could just leave it in the comments, the negative, but it's not fair to the community, because the community could turn around and just at glance say, hey, but this is the most requested feature. Why doesn't it exist? And then you have to sit there and say, well, if you look at the comments,
exactly.
And then you have to explain things, and it just makes it much more difficult to manage the community by in this situation, not giving both up and down.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So going back to your comments around how the industry around sort of like adult sites, you get 90% mostly male, 10% female, but FetLife has 50-50. One of the things that jumped out on me on the Why You Join section is specifically the point that says FetLife is not a meat market, and that's why it works. Fewer trolls, less BS, more real people. How does your community police itself? I mean, with 3 million members, I mean, do you have like a hugely active sort of set of moderators? Like, do you have community members who go in and enforce things? How does that side of it work?
So everything really grew organically.
Uh-huh.
I used to greet every single person who joined the site to the point where I was greeting like 9 hours a day. And then members of the site were like, oh, come on, let us help you. Let us help you. I'm like, no, I need to do it. I need to do it. It scales. And then
right.
I would just get so burnt out that I'm like, fine, we'll create a greeter team. And you three people who've been bugging me, you're on it. And then the same thing happened with like moderation. What we did is we created a caretaking team. And the reason we call it caretaking and not moderation is because I think just the word moderation is just
kind of negative, right?
It's an ugly name. It's a power hungry name. I believe that our caretakers are there is to help people and to understand both sides and to work with people. And even if you explain to people or explain to the caretakers or the community, like, oh no, the moderators are not moderators. They're supposed to care and take care. It's just the word doesn't mesh with it.
Right.
It doesn't brand it well. So we created caretakers, and they were volunteer. I think at one point we had like 20 volunteer caretakers, but the site got so big that we had to slowly move from volunteers to fully paid, caretakers. How many caretakers do we have? We have 7 full-time caretakers, but we still have 6-7 volunteer caretakers. And they handle anywhere between 500 and 1,000, emails a day. And that could be from anything about like, oh, I can't get into my site, to, hey, this is a copyright picture, to, hey, this person called me a bad name.
Yeah.
And they work with the community trying to, you know, solve the problems.
That's really fantastic. Is there anything that they do on, so you mentioned like responding to emails, but like on the site itself, do you ever, you know, remove comments or remove content for any particular reason, or do you tend to let the community police itself there?
No, we are much more moderator heavy than most sites.
Okay. It sort of seemed like you would, I mean, it, because it is, like even accessing the site for one time, like it felt really, really comfortable. Like it felt like it wasn't a scary place. And so I was wondering how much moderation played, well, caretaking played into it.
You know, some people would say we moderate way too much. Some people say we don't moderate enough. It's really,
right.
really hard to make everybody happy. When it comes to copyright, I think, some of our photographers will still think we don't go far enough.
Mm-hmm.
But we've come a long way. For instance, like as soon as the Kate Upton pictures came onto the site, the second it came out, we removed it right away.
Right.
There was no questions asked. We knew she didn't consent to those pictures. She said it publicly. We don't have to contact her. But I gotta admit, I'm really proud of some of the things we do. For instance, if there's a picture on the site that somebody emails in and says, hey, you know what? I'm not sure this person has the right to post. We will reverse image search it. We'll find out who is the owner of that picture. We'll email them and we'll say, hey, did you give this person on this site permission to post the picture? Because if you didn't, just fill out this DMCA takedown and we'll take it down right away. And then we'll email the member and say, hey, you know what? The owner of the picture didn't give you permission. We're taking it down. If you did get permission, it was a mistake, you know, hit us back up. But please review all your other pictures. And, we really go way. No, it's not right to say we go way above, but I'm really proud of the fact that we take things much further so that the quality on the site the quality of the content that's uploaded is not like a Me Too site. It's very original.
Yeah.
Which makes FetLife for me much, much more fun to browse, interesting to browse. If you go to tube sites, which FetLife's not at all, but if you go to any of those like adult tube sites, if you go to any one of the thousands, it's all the same videos.
Mm-hmm.
FetLife, it's all original content. And that's something that I'm proud about. And we at the end of the day, we designed FetLife for us.
Right.
It's the site we love hanging out on.
That's really, really, it's fantastic. I know that seems like such a low emotion word to use, but it's great to see all of the originality and people really, showing their true interest. I spent a lot of my time looking at branded communities, and a lot of the times I think brands have a hard time getting really true authentic, like, conversation and discussion and content happening because, they want it to be a certain way or they want it to be about this or that. And what I love about Feverbee is the way we sort of are like, focus on the interest, because when you get the interest right, then all that authentic, original content and conversation just comes naturally because people are just so interested and invested in what they're talking about and what they're doing. And it just sounds like you really hit the nail on the head when you guys first started putting the site together.
I mean, when it comes to brand communities, I definitely know that there's an industry for it. I'm not going to insult it, but if you want to create a branded community, you literally have to ask yourself, are you willing to put your needs aside for the needs of your customers or your community?
Oh, that is a great quote.
Then it couldn't possibly come out of my mouth. It's because there can't be a conflict of interest. It's the same reason why, like all these IT consulting companies, they hit me up. It's like, hire us to help program. It's like, no, your goal and my goal is not aligned.
Mm-hmm.
You want to bill me, hourly and to try to get as many hours. I want to build a great community.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important for people's goals to be aligned for it to be successful. And all of us on the team, we're all about the community. We love the community. We want to be successful. And we think about them before we think about ourselves. Everybody on the team might not be the best community managers and best, most well-trained support people in the world that know exactly in this step we do this and that step we do this according to like the standard book of supporting people.
Mm-hmm.
But what they do is they care a lot.
Yeah.
And that's when you build a good team is when people care a lot, they'll start making the right decisions without having to have a manual. I mean, there is a caretaking guidelines. But you'll always come up every day with a new exception. And if the people really care about people, they'll find a way or they'll find a solution to the problem. Because there's no such thing as there's no hard and fast rule for any type of scenario that always works. I don't think, from my experience.
Very fair point. When you are looking at growing your team, do you reach out to members on the site who put a lot into it and see if they're interested? Or I've heard of a few communities that do that.
We should do that more. Mm. The problem is that the community is really large.
Right.
So it's hard to really see all, really see somebody might be doing, we have like 30,000 groups, probably right. Much more than that. So it's like some people might be killing it in some groups I'm just not a member of and I just don't see and there's no way to keep up with all those groups.
Mm-hmm.
So we put a post, we put a banner at the top of the site and we put up a job ad or we'll put up an ad for looking for new volunteers and people apply. And we look through that. But when they do apply, I mean, we check out their profile right away and see how they are as people and how they carry themselves on the site and, how they contribute to the community, what people are saying about them. It's much more important than like a CV. We tend to not ask for CVs. We can see them.
Yeah.
We can see what they're doing on the site.
Actions speak louder than words.
Yep. Point.
Exactly. Oh, very cool. So what sort of words of advice do you have maybe for community owners who also have communities that are centered around really, kind of private, personal, or even adult-oriented interests? I would imagine that there may be a really big legal aspect that comes into play every now and again with different allegations. How do you go about handling that?
So that's a loaded question. There's a lot there. So my general my general 10,000 foot level is always do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy to figure out what the right thing is. But when any community that you run, for instance, FetLife, we have billions of pages, probably billions of pages on FetLife, and only 4 to 10 of them are accessible by Google. We would have been, you know, right now we're one of the top 1,000 largest websites in the world or somewhere there. We would have been a top 100 if every single one of those pages were open.
Right.
You know, at least a businessman would think that. But we were like, no, you know, that's not the right thing to do for the community. We need to grow. We need to give people their privacy. And that's a feature. We'll grow slower. It'll all be from word of mouth, but at least, you know, people will feel more secure and happier. And, you know, that's what I want for my own stuff. So that's doing the right thing. When it comes for allegations, man, I don't believe in being the jury, judge, and executioner.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to accusing somebody of a huge legal crime,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's more like it doesn't belong on a site. You really, really need to take this up with police.
Mm.
So if it's a legal thing, we always recommend people to take it up with the police, and we'll work with them and we'll talk with them. We'll always be there for them for support, but we don't allow legal. What's
like
the word
slander.
We use? Slander. It's like, hey, this person pooped on me.
Yeah.
Okay, in our sense, that's a whole complicated one. But
but maybe more like accusations.
Let's say somebody accused somebody else of rape.
Right.
Okay. Let's come straight out with the question.
Yeah.
What we do is we remove the person's name. Mm-hmm. You know, people should be able to. Be able to, not vent, but be able to share how they feel on the site, but they don't need to mention names.
Mm-hmm.
They should be like, if they want to write in their diary and share it with their friends, it's okay. It's mm-hmm. really great. But as soon as you start mentioning names, it becomes a circus. And if somebody was attacked or whatever, it's the worst, one of the worst crimes anybody can commit in the world.
Absolutely.
It's horrendous. It's horrible. But it should not be judged. It shouldn't be tried in the
court of the internet.
Court of public opinion.
Yeah.
It should be tried in the court, in real courts. Yes, I know statistically, a lot of people don't come forward to go see cops. I know that it's very hard to prove, somebody was sexually assaulted or raped.
Right.
But that's a problem that needs to be solved. And it's not going to be solved by Joe Schmo on the internet, who's like read one side, is like, oh, let this person die.
Right. Absolutely. So basically, you know, really, really, especially with specific accusations, really encouraging people to go to police and offering your support as much as possible.
Yeah.
And then removing names are kind of like the big core pieces that you guys work around.
Names or anything that like.
Kind of anything like, that's kind of like identifying.
Yeah. You're like. Yeah. Not John, but J-O, there's some space and an N. You know, it's anything that identifies somebody.
Right. Any identifiable. All right. Well, that makes a lot of sense. You mentioned growth, and you mentioned saying that you intentionally decided, you know, we're not going to index a whole bunch of pages. We'll grow word of mouth and grow organically. How did – so guessing growth is mostly word of mouth, but especially in the first like early days when you first started getting people to come into the community, how did that work? I mean, how, aside from, I guess, people just telling friends, did you, you know, do any specific sort of like outreach campaigns? You'd mentioned like welcoming every new member early on. What sort of tactics and strategies did you do there?
So, the whole thing is you build it, they come ain't true. So of course I emailed like 50 friends. You know, a couple of people signed up, then nobody signed up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just, this was before Twitter, I guess. And sex blogging was big. Mm-hmm. And I emailed every single sex blogger and I didn't say, hey, please, could you sign up to my site?
Mm-hmm.
That's not nice, first of all. What I did was I said, listen, I started the site. You know, you seem really smart. You've been around the block many times. I'd love for you to check out the site and tell me what you think about it and how I can prove it to better serve the community. And that's what I did, and it worked fantastically.
Yeah, so really just genuine, authentic relationship building comes out on top.
Who would have thought that,
Who would have thought that?
You know too much about the, everybody's about themselves. Everybody's always about themselves.
And the quick wins, right? What's going to get us the most for this, for that, you know, in the least amount of time and the least amount of effort. And sometimes to build something really good and to have it do really, really well, it just takes sheer gut hard work and a sheer, you know, like a genuine interest and like care into what you're doing.
You know how hard it is to find somebody who really is all about, like, listen, if I do great things and I help people, eventually I'll be taken care of. Yeah. I mean, that's something that you have to be born with, and you have to come from a family that is like that. Everything I do and everything I've learned is from my parents. If it wasn't my parents who brought me up the way I did, they brought me up. And it's not like they told me. It's what they did for me.
Right.
I wouldn't be able to, I wouldn't be where I am today, which some would argue is nowhere, but I'm on a podcast with you. It gotta be something.
Yeah, you're high up there in my book. What is the one piece of, what would you say is like a good lesson from your parents that like applies to you every day?
Oh my God. So my father, it's going to be a long one, unfortunately. Okay. Sorry.
No worries.
My father was a famous hairstylist.
Very cool.
He owned the largest hairdressing salon in Montreal. And he was always the first one to leave work and always the last one to leave work. And, when I was 10 years old and asked him for a job because I was saving up for a remote control car, you know, he said, I'll buy you one. I was like, no, I want to earn it myself.
Oh, you're such a good kid.
I was a good kid. And then he offered me $20 a day for like 12-hour days. Man, that was child labor, but Nice. After 2 weeks, I got a raise to 25.
There you go.
Really impressed him. So yeah, no, it was like while I was working for him, he'd always be the first one there. He'd make coffee for his clients. My dad does like 60 people a day. Dad has two assistants, but he would stop what he's doing. If somebody didn't get somebody a coffee, he'd put everything down, run, go get them coffee, smile, say hi. They came in. He would work the room. He would didn't work Sundays and Sundays and Mondays. And he would wake up like 5 o'clock in the morning on Sunday. He'd be in the kitchen cooking. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm cooking, spani kofta for Mrs. Kustner. I'm like, your client? It's like, yeah, she really likes it. So I'm like, so you're cooking and when are you going to bring it to her? It's like, oh, as soon as I finish, I'm going to go bring it to her. She has friends over. He didn't charge or anything. He knew she liked it. So he made it for her. He sincerely wanted to do that. You know, when there was danishes in the morning, he knew each person what danish they liked, and he made sure that I gave it to them. He made sure that I gave the right coffee. And you know, on Saturday when it's like pumping, the bathroom wasn't clean. This guy, my dad, had like 15 employees working for him on that day, on Saturdays. You know, he would go and clean the toilet himself. And I'm like, Dad, what are you doing? Give me the mop. He's like, no, you know, if you want something done, you got to do it yourself, and you got to take care of people. And if somebody complains to me, I'm embarrassed, and I'm gonna fix it. And it wasn't what he said. It was always what he did. I watched him, you know, we'd go to restaurants in Montreal and he'd have a bunch of clients in the same restaurant and it'd take him 10 minutes to get to the table, you know, because he sat there and he honestly cared. He's like, oh, how's your nephew? You know, how was the surgery? How was this? He just really authentically cared and wanted to take care of people. And my mother was exactly the same way, colder version. But exactly the same way, and what I learned from her was to be anal as fudge. Fudge, sorry, we're trying to keep it clean. And my mother was so anal. It was never good enough. You always had to push further. And she wasn't strict and says, you need to push it further. It's like, I'll sit with you, and I don't think it's good enough. We're going to push further. And my mother would, no matter what time she woke up, she would stay up as late as possible, make sure everything was always perfect, and her kids were always taken care of, always.
Those are fantastic lessons. And really, I mean, the heart of everything, hearing those two stories, it's like, it's the heart of everything that you do every day. And it completely illustrates and underlines every single point that we've talked about in this discussion. So, thanks so much for sharing that. So words of advice to everyone out there who's listening. Do the right thing, genuinely care, and you will be great in life.
Yep, yep.
Comes from you. All right. Well, that takes us actually just about to the end of our time today. Thank you so much, John, for your time. Really, really appreciate it.
No problem. And,
so to everyone out there who's listening, if you liked what you heard, make sure to visit communitygeek.com/podcast to review our show notes. I will put John's – are you on Twitter? Do you like Twitter? I'll put John's Twitter handle
there. I do not like Twitter.
You don't like Twitter. Okay, well, then you can tell me what to put up there. But either way, I will, we'll have a recap, and any of the resources mentioned will be listed up there as well. So thanks so much for listening, everybody, and we will talk to you soon.